Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. My guest today is Harry Hawkins, who ran in 2016 on the Green Party line. And he's here to talk about Amazon and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So, hi, Harry. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks.
Have you recovered from the election?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm working a part-time job. Well, it's 12-hour shifts at the post office right now during peak season, so I'll be a free man in January.
Wow, wow! You just can't get away from delivering mail, can you?
Well, it's handling mail inside the plant.
Okay.
So it's unloading and sorting and putting sleeves on mail trays and putting trays in cages and cages into trucks, stuff like that.
Wow. So with the advent of the internet, has the mail stuff gone down? Is there like less mail than there used to be?
Yeah, mail is. Yeah, there's still a lot of standard mail. You know, people do advertising. First-class mail, yeah, email is cut into that. But the package business is picked up. So, you know, the post office, postage is paying for the post office's operating costs. The reason people hear it in trouble is that Congress is trying to make them pre-fund their health and pension benefits 75 years in advance. So they're supposed to pay now for people that aren't even born yet. And it's really a setup by Congress to try to privatize the Postal Service and let UPS and FedEx take over that business. So it's it's a bad thing that Congress has done.
So let's talk a little bit about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's coming out with an environmental program that is either the same or similar to yours. What's your feeling on that?
Well, we don't have a copyright. We're not looking for royalties. We just want the program implemented. So I'm glad she's raising the idea of a Green New Deal. And I hope it includes, which I think it ought to, that it's fulfilling the original New Deal, the idea that Roosevelt articulated in his last State of the Union address that everybody ought to have economic rights, a second Bill of Rights, an economic Bill of Rights, the right to a job, a living wage, or an income above poverty, a decent home, comprehensive health care, and a good education. And then the green part of it is we need to transform our energy system so it is carbon neutral. So we stop putting carbon in the atmosphere and heating up the planet, and that's an existential threat. And you need both parts of that, I think, politically to get the program passed, because there's a lot of resistance to things like that would go along with a Green New Deal, like a carbon tax, if people can't pay their bills. But if you provide the economic security of a job, income, housing, health care, and a good education, then people have the economic security where they can accept the transition from fossil fuels to renewables. So I think those got to go together. And from what I've seen, I've been busy, of course, working these 12-hour shifts. From what I've seen, that's part of what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has proposed Congress look at. So I think that's all to the good. We're just going to have to keep their feet to the fire because, you know, she represents the progressive wing, which is a minority of the Congressional caucus, a Democratic caucus, and, you know, Nancy, we're capitalist, Pelosi is the speaker. So, you know, they've got a fight on their hands.
So do you think that by Ocasio-Cortez espousing this, that will help the Greens down the line? What's your feeling about that?
Well, because I don't have faith the Democrats are actually going to do it, it probably will, because we will do it. The Greens will do it. But the fact that she's, you know, from a position in Congress calling for a committee to look at this is, you know, I think raising the profile of the whole idea. And it's not just her that took it up, the Sunrise Movement, which was trying to get candidates to pledge not to take fossil fuel money, which I did, okay. And everybody in the general election did not in the governor's race. They're calling for a Green New Deal. So, you know, and of course I ran on it. Jill Stein ran on it as the Green Party candidate for president. So, you know, that's the historic role of third parties in this country. We bring up issues and policies that major parties ignore until they can't ignore them. You know, that's what the Liberty Party did with slavery, what the populists did with money questions and the monopoly question, and what the socialists did with social insurance, the eight-hour day, labor standards, and so forth.
Now, how long has the Green Party been in existence?
Well, we started organizing in 1984, inspired by the fact that about 30 Greens got elected to the Bundestag, that's their Congress in Germany, in 1983.
Okay.
And, you know, we needed a new left because there was no independent left in this country. And what was left of the 60s, new left, had gone into the Democratic Party with Jesse Jackson and the Rainbow Coalition and disappeared. So we started organizing then, and so we've been at it for a while.
So you have been at it for a while. So my question to you is, do you ever get weary? Do you ever get, like, disgusted that it's not moving faster? What's your blueprint for, you know, the success of the Green Party?
Well, I do get impatient, but I've also been involved in movements that started out as a tiny minority. You know, 1966 and 67, those of us protesting the war in Vietnam were a small minority, and we were vilified. And by the time of the Tet Offensive at the beginning of 68, public opinion started switching until the majority was with us over the next couple of years. Anti-nuclear movement, anti-apartheid movement. Now, that was one where people said we were right, but we couldn't move the country. We couldn't move, you know, the institutions to divest and the country to impose sanctions on South Africa. But we got that passed. We had Congress override Reagan's veto in 1985. The ban on fracking, you know, I ran on that in 2010. And, you know, most of the environmental movement was still saying, oh, gas is better than coal, so let's use it as a bridge to renewables. We were saying, no, it still pollutes the environment. It turns out it's worse than coal when you consider how dangerous methane is. It's more potent as a greenhouse gas. And by 2014, we got a ban on fracking. So I think with respect to a third party of the left, look, the people are with us on questions like the economic rights I talked about before. Public opinion polling shows the majority of people think government ought to be the employer of last resort for people who are willing and able to work and can't find work in the private sector. They support Medicare for all, improve Medicare for all. They say everybody, government should play a role in making sure there's affordable housing for everybody. And public schools, we should have good public schools. I mean, these are things that the people support, but we're not getting from the two parties. So sooner or later, we're going to break through, and that's what keeps me going. You know, I know the conditions are there, and we just got to keep plugging away. You never know when things are going to break. Like, who knew Occupy was going to break out in 2011? I mean, some of us thought it was ripe. The time was ripe. We were coming out of the Great Recession, or really still in it. And you had these Arab Springs and other anti-austerity movements in Europe, and they were occupying Freedom Squares. So I was part of a call to occupy Freedom Square in Washington, D.C. on October 1st. But the Adbusters beat us to the punch by telling people to go to Wall Street a couple of weeks earlier. And there were people there, and it at first didn't get much attention until those young women were maced by those officers when they were kettled, and people got outraged, and suddenly it exploded across the country. You just never know, you know, what spark is going to, you know, light the fire, but you just keep plugging away.
Now, a week after the election, it was on a Tuesday, so it was the 13th of November.
Yep.
I pick up the paper, and I see that Amazon is going to move into Long Island City. And during the election, I never heard about this, and I kept, you know, kept my ear to the, you know, I listened to everything. I read everything. So it came as quite a surprise for me. And I don't remember anybody really addressing this issue. And I've spoken to people who come from New York City that's really up in arms about it. What's your feeling about Amazon? And do you think it's going to be helpful or no?
Well, I think it's quite something that the first thing Cuomo does after getting reelected is give $3.1 billion to the richest man in the world. I mean,
right.
We have a subway crisis in New York City. We have a housing crisis in New York City. The public schools are overcrowded. Right there in Long Island City, I was reading one of the schools has 135% of capacity, and this is just going to make it worse. So, you know, the issue was discussed, not with respect to Amazon, but with respect to Cuomo's corporate welfare policies and how instead of giving money to companies, and, you know, it tends to be companies that contribute to his campaigns, and that's where we get all this corruption, that money should be invested in infrastructure that everybody benefits from. It creates, you know, public infrastructure are the private public avenues of private commerce, and also how people get to and from work. So that's where the money should be going. And, it, you know, Amazon, look, Google expanded in New York City without subsidies. Amazon was coming here anyway because this is where there's talent and it's close to markets. There are a lot of reasons why I was going to locate here. But it played this whole charade, getting, you know, hundreds of cities around the country to promise all this money. But it was really just, I think they knew where they were going all along. It was Washington, D.C. and New York City, the East Coast, the government near the Pentagon, and New York City, the Financial Center. And so this was just a way to bargain away some benefits from the taxpayers that ought to be going to the things that all taxpayers benefit from, public infrastructure and services.
So do you think from the very beginning Cuomo was in cahoots with Bezos and it was a done deal, even though there was, you know, a lot of hoopla involved?
Well, it's clear there were serious negotiations going on. I don't know if Cuomo knew it was a done deal. Maybe Bezos did. Bezos may have known he was going to New York City. But it was kept under wraps until the election was over. And that's a problem. You know, these things, especially, you know, expending taxpayers' money, the taxpayers should know what is up. You know, the database of deals that was talked about, so that all these corporate welfare programs are on a database where people can see where it's going and who's getting it. Cuomo's opposed to that. And I don't, you know, it passed the Senate. You know, the Republicans wanted to needle Cuomo. And, you know, Hastie in the Assembly, who does Cuomo's bidding, wouldn't let it come to a vote on the Assembly side. And I don't think we're going to see it. I don't think we're going to see it. The Democrats probably are not going to cross Cuomo unless there's some revolt against him going on that I haven't heard about. But everything I'm hearing is, you know, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, you know, first words out of her mouth after the election was, oh, we're not those tax and spend Democrats. Oh, no, that doesn't pertain to us. And Cuomo had those Long Island and Westchester senators that were getting elected sign a deal, you know, an agreement on policy that basically said New York City is going to have to pay for its own subways. Like Cuomo came up to Syracuse a couple years ago and said, fix your own pipes. When we ask for help, we have a water main break almost every day here. You know, our pipes are 100, 150 years old, and it's a $2 billion project. Our city is broke because of the unfunded mandates, and, you know, the state basically says all you can do is a property tax. Half our property's off the tax roll because it's the universities and the hospitals and government buildings, not to mention breaks for developers. Like the big developer here, our mini Donald Trump here, has 45-year tax abatement on the biggest mall in the city. So, you know, we don't have the tax base to do that, so we just patch the mains as they break. And Cuomo said, we have to figure out where to get the money ourselves. Well, we don't have the money.
You mentioned Andrea Stewart-Cousins a minute ago. I know Mike Gennaris has come out publicly against the Amazon deal. So I think that's going to be interesting. When is the timetable for Amazon to relocate in Long Island City?
I've been reading is they expect construction to start in 2020, even though information released by Cuomo and de Blasio about taxes this will bring in assumes that the people start working there in 2019, which is absurd. It's a few weeks away. You know, it's going to take them a while to draw up the plans and, you know, get all the permits and all that. So 2020 is probably even a little optimistic, although they'll probably try to steamroll this. Although they do have a couple of hurdles. The public authorities has to, what's it called? The Public Authorities Control Board has to make a couple of decisions. And one of these, the Public Authorities Control Board, the state's given them $500 million grant. That has to be approved. And then they got to approve the whole land use plan. So that's one point of leverage. And the other thing is the Excelsior Jobs Program is phasing out, and they will have to add authority to for those tax expenditures for Amazon to get the full benefit. So that's where the legislature has a role in limiting the subsidy. But a lot of this stuff is what they call as-of-right programs. That means if you qualify under the legislation, you qualify, you get the money.
Okay.
And that's the problem with these corporate welfare programs.
So is there a window of opportunity for people to protest this who don't like it? And ultimately, do you think that the people in New York City will, their transportation needs, their housing needs will be further compromised? Do you think that there's a possibility that those people can win out in the end?
Yeah, if they put enough pressure on their Senate and Assembly representatives and their City Council representatives and insist on things like there has to be public benefits from Amazon to deal with, like, the L line in New York City is overcrowded as it is and it's being shut down for repairs. Have Amazon kick into that because it will affect their project. The schools, there need to be schools built in the Long Island City area. They're overcrowded already. The housing crisis is incredible, and there's already been a lot of building in Long Island City, and gentrification and displacement is underway. So those are things they can, at the city level and the state level, demand. They can demand the Public Authorities Control Board not approve that $500 million grant. They have leverage over the land use process there. And in the legislature, like I said, on the Excelsior Jobs Program, they can say, we're not going to authorize more spending on that. Amazon's going to have to pay their employees out of its own pocket. And its pockets are deep. It can afford to pay. And there's another leverage, I think, and that is we should insist that they have some kind of project, union neutrality agreement, so that people who work there can organize. Amazon's notoriously anti-union. In fact, on Black Friday, right after Thanksgiving, Amazon workers in the UK, Germany, Italy, and Spain went on a strike against the low wages and the hazardous working conditions and the company's, you know, union busting tactics. So there are a lot of points of leverage that people can push.
That's good. So the one thing that I find very interesting is Zephyr Teachout. Now, Zephyr Teachout was seen as somebody who might question the Amazon deal. And in the primary, Sean Patrick Maloney was in the race, and Chris Churchill of the Times Union said that he was put there by Cuomo to take away votes from Zephyr Teachout. So if that's the case, and Zephyr would have won, would she have made Cuomo's life miserable about the Amazon deal?
I don't know. I'm skeptical that she would. First of all, you know, her funding base when she ran for governor was high tech, you know, the Amazon type of companies. Secondly, you know, she hasn't taken controversial positions. You know, like when she ran for governor, she was asked repeatedly, did Cuomo do the right thing going to Israel to support it while it bombed Gaza, you know, really badly and you know, invaded with its troops. And she said nothing. And then finally, like a week before the campaign, she said, yeah, Cuomo was right to do that. So I think she's kind of cautious in terms of bucking the establishment in the Democratic Party. She did get up and run against Cuomo, but she had encouragement from a wing, you know, the Working Families Party wing of the Democratic Party.
Right.
And then, you know, running for attorney general, that was wide open. So, you know, she wasn't bucking really anybody to do that. So, but on the other hand, you know, her thing is anti-monopoly, antitrust. And
mm-hmm.
Amazon, if anything, is becoming a monopoly. I mean, I think
mm-hmm.
these platforms like Google, Facebook, Amazon, they inherently monopolize because the platforms with the most people are the ones that everybody wants to get on because that's where the most information is. They're the most useful.
Right.
And maybe they should be run as public utilities for public benefit at cost instead of for private profit for their owners. I mean, Amazon is like, I don't know if it's the richest corporation in the world, but it's sure enough near. And Bezos is the richest man in the world. And that's monopolization. Those are monopoly profits.
Now, Assemblyman Ron Kim from Queens has been very vocal against Amazon. And his basis right now is anti-Amazon and forgiving student loan debt. He says that if the money that was given to Bezos was put to rest the student loan debt crisis in New York State, this state would be a lot better. So I had called the Chamber of Commerce here in the Capital Region, and I asked to have an interview about this issue with the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce. And he said, oh, you know, Amazon has no effect in the upstate area. So I he never called me back. I called him. And what he fails to realize is the money that could be given to the people in New York State who have student debt, that would open up, you know, where they could buy houses, where they could buy cars. And it would make the economy a lot better instead of giving it to one people. But a lot of people really don't understand the concept. What do you think?
Well, the chamber probably doesn't want to get the student debt off students' backs, but they do want to lower taxes. They don't want to see money wasted. So it does affect, you know, the members of the Chambers of Commerce upstate because Amazon's getting $3 billion, and their members are not. So, you know, some of these people, I don't know who they think they're representing. It's like when the business council comes out against single payer, when at least small businesses in the state, any business providing health care to their employees is going to save money. Who are they representing? They're representing the businesses that don't provide health care to their employees.
Uh-huh. Hmm. So, in our final moments here, Howie, any thoughts or predictions about the future session and what's going to transpire?
Well, I'm not going to make any predictions. I do know once I'm a free man again in January, I'm going to be working very hard to make sure that the single-payer bill isn't watered down and that we give it the best chance of getting passed. And I'm going to fight for the New York off fossil fuels bill to get us to 100% clean energy by 2030. It's much superior to the bill called the Community and Climate Protection Act that the Democrats have been promoting, which purportedly gets us there by 2050. That's too late to deal with the climate crisis. And, you know, it's just a bill that doesn't have the teeth that the New York off fossil fuels bill does. So those are going to be my top two priorities. Also, I think given what happened in this last election, it's an opportunity to talk about public campaign finance with mandatory debates attached to the public financing so that Cuomo can't dictate when and where and who gets to debate. And there are other issues, of course, but those are the top three in that I'm thinking about.
Okay, great. So I hope to talk to you when the new session starts, and I'm sure you'll have a lot to say. So you have been listening to 2016 Green Party candidate for Governor Howie Hawkins. I'm sorry, 2018.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Time goes by pretty quickly. So if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment, hashtag Focus on Albany. Thanks, Howie. Best wishes in the holiday season, and I look forward to talking with you in the new year. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.